lock up the Oregon fuel injection hotline and hit the ground running and get our early view this week from the north. Yep. Back at the Oregonian, covering Ducks, Beavs, Blazers. On Twitter, use the handle at Aaron J. Fentress. So, how's Team Fentress doing this festive holiday week?
You know, that song Smooth Criminal is 34 years old.
Oh, man. Make me feel old. Thanks.
It just dawned on me. I was like, that song is 34. When I was in high school, a song 34 years old would have been from the 50s. And I would have been like, ew, that song's old.
Yeah, well, if you think about it, the Beatles broke up 51 years ago. So people who listened to them in high school, you're talking back to the 20s and the Depression. It's just...
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah.
Team Fentress is good, man. I came back from a road trip. I went a year and a half without getting COVID, came back from a road trip, and bam, tested positive. I felt sick on Wednesday last week. Not too badly, but I was like, this is weird. So I didn't go to the Bulls Blazers game, just being responsible. And that hurt because, you know, I'm a Bulls fan, although it worked out because if I would have watched them melt down like that, I might not have been in a good I might have lost some professionalism that night. And then Thursday I got tested and I had COVID. And Thursday was pretty tough, but I've been sicker. You know what I mean?
Like, I know what you mean.
So I was sick, but I've been way sicker. But I was wondering if it was going to get worse. And then Friday, I actually couldn't smell, but I could still taste, thank goodness, because you know, my wife went and got some Thai food. And I was like, come on, man, I can't be missing out on the yellow curry chicken. So I could still taste it. I just couldn't smell it. And then Saturday, I started feeling way better. And Sunday, it was almost like I was never sick. And then I tested myself again last night. What's today? Monday,
Tuesday,
right?
Tuesday.
Okay, so I did lose track of the days. That did happen because when you're holed up and quarantined and away from everyone, days just kind of blend together. But I did test negative last night, but my wife still wants me to stay quarantined for another day and then test again before she'll let me back into the wild, so to speak. So, yeah, but everyone in my family tested negative. Everyone I came in contact with Monday at the Blazers game tested negative. So I'm not sure exactly where I caught it. I think somewhere in Houston or Denver. But all good in the Fentress neighborhood other than that.
I would blame Texas in a heartbeat. But
that's what my daughter said. She said, you were in Texas.
And by the way, for anybody listening, the quick recovery, because you're all vaxxed up. You did the right thing.
I'm all vaxxed up, yes. Yeah. I mean, you definitely have to give credit for that. I mean, obviously you would hope, you know, you would prefer not to get it at all, but clearly we know that there's breakthrough cases. And at the end of the day, you know, the vaccine is going to keep you from being super sick. And I was not super sick at all. Probably the worst of it was just, you know, a little bit of a fever and coughing. But that didn't last entirely that long. So
obviously,
all good, man.
You're here now. I could barely tell. talking with Aaron Fentress of the Oregonian. So I saw Joey Harrington said the dearly departed Civil War should be replaced with the Platypus Cup. I have not heard one great idea. Somebody sarcastically said, you know how Georgia, Florida goes biggest outdoor cocktail party, maybe biggest outdoor craft beer party. And anything grab you, or until someone comes up with a doozy, just let it lay there like the Washington football team?
I kind of remember calling it the Platypus Bowl back in high school or maybe college or something like that. That's kind of an old joke. In this state, calling it that. So I would kind of go for that, I think. It's something that's kind of bizarre or different, unique to the state. Other people would make fun of it, but who cares? So I could go with that or just, you know, come up with something else. Like, I mean, I don't know what, but it's got to come up with, they have to come up with something. We can't just not call it something, right? It has to have a name. I keep calling it Civil War. It's just out of reflex. So until they get a new name, I'm probably going to keep accidentally calling it that.
Oh, yeah. We're in Nike land. There's got to be a marketing angle somewhere. I mean, it can't just lay dormant like that. No, come on. In talking with the trio of Ducks, Joey, Jordan, and Anthony, who I think they revealed just how much they bleed green and yellow in 2016 when they picked Oregon over Washington and they lost by 56. So what was the consensus about the disaster that happened in Salt Lake City?
Oh, obviously very disappointed because they know how close the team was to maybe making the playoffs. But I don't think horribly shocked. I mean, as much grief as Newman will give me week to week, Newman knows football. He knows football better than me, and he knows when the team is not, you know, firing on all cylinders. And I think he kind of figured something was going to happen. Not a blowout like that. I think that's where the biggest disappointment comes from. But the fact that they lost, I don't think is shocking to anyone. It's definitely not shocking to me. I've been saying all season, I don't think this is a playoff team, that they had some losses coming in conference. And, they, you know, Stanford lost, and they almost lost to UCLA, and they struggled with some other teams like Cal. And then this one bit them. And, you know, it's a tough loss, clearly, for the program, but I think you just have to recalibrate your settings and chase after that conference title and chase after that Rose Bowl. And, you know, I would hope fans would realize that as much as it might disappoint them, that it just really wasn't that realistic. And what I always do is I always look at the current team versus the teams who have accomplished what you want the current team to accomplish. And I just never felt like this team stacked up with 2014, 13, 12, 11, 10, maybe even 9, definitely 7, 05, 01. Like, I just didn't think it was in that class, even 19. So I'm not surprised at all that they lost another game at some point.
You know what the bottom line is? I know where this program was, where it got to, where it is. There's just no way a reasonable person could see the Rose Bowl as a disappointment. I'm sorry. I don't care what your expectations were.
100%. 100%, man. And it just drives me nuts when I, you know, win another meaningless Rose Bowl. It's just weird. And I get that people want a national championship so badly, and the program has come close. It's flirted with it, right?
Yeah.
But I just don't. I don't know. To me, there's something weird about the idea of saying that, well, if we don't win a national championship, then nothing else matters. That's just weird to me. But whatever. I think that's mostly the New Age fan.
And yeah.
To me, if you've only been a fan since the Chip Kelly era, then you would have been an Oregon State fan if Oregon State had been the premier team in the state. You're not truly 100% bleeding green and gold. You're just a bandwagon fan, and that's where I think that mentality comes from, because they don't really have anything invested in the history of the program and what it means for it to be where it is right now.
Talking with Aaron Fentress of the Oregonian, a general thought on Utah, because, you know, programs like Maryland, Nebraska, Missouri, you know, they transferred from a Power 5 league to another. This school jumped up from the Mountain West, and now they've won the South 3 or 4 years. I mean, I think it's pretty fair to say that that's a hell of an accomplishment, and Kyle Whittingham is just one of the best coaches around.
Oh, absolutely. When they came into the conference, you know, you kind of wondered how they would fare, how they would be able to handle recruiting against the other teams in the conference, especially to somewhere like Utah, which isn't necessarily a destination for a lot of kids. But, man, I mean, there's no denying that they've done a great job there. And they get the right types of kids who fit what they want to do. They want to play tough, hard-nosed football. They want to run the ball. They want to play defense. And they've always been able to find a good, solid quarterback, you know, who's not going to make mistakes, who can also give you some dual threat ability and play smart football. And, yeah, I mean, they've done a great job. There's no doubt. And hats off to them. I'm really, you know, I don't necessarily have a dog in the fight, obviously, this weekend. But if I were pulling for something, I would kind of like to see an Oregon-Utah rematch. And sort of see what Oregon does to try and make up for what happened at Utah.
What about Oregon State? I mean, those two duds at Cal and Colorado leads to the firing of the defensive coordinator. And at that point, I'm like, are they really going to blow a bowl game? And then they come out in back-to-back games, and they land here with a shot at the North. What do you make of kind of that about-face and how dangerous this team is coming to Autzen Saturday?
Yeah, still disappointed they dropped both of those. Two upsets, or one upset, fine, but two was just ridiculous. But thank goodness they got the Stanford win, because that took a lot of pressure off of them going against ASU. Handling ASU the way they did was impressive, because ASU is a pretty solid team. And now they come into Oregon with a chance to win this. I mean, Utah set out the blueprint for beating Oregon. If you could run and play hard-nosed football up front against them and control the ball and control the clock, and you can prevent Oregon's running game from running all over you, you're going to have a shot to win. I'm not sure. I think both teams are going to run the ball for over 200 yards. I think it's going to come down to, you know, some kind of special teams thing or a turnover, or which quarterback can make, you know, the most plays to tip their team over the top. But given what Oregon State does well, and given what Utah just did to Oregon in the running game, I think Oregon State definitely, absolutely has a chance to win this game. On Saturday, I'm still leaning Ducks because they are more talented and they're at home. But what Oregon State's done, having 7 wins right now, a chance to get to 8, is awesome. It's awesome for obviously that program, but it's awesome for the state to have both teams be viable. Like, they don't have to both be contenders, but to have one be a national name and the other one be winning 1 or 2 games, it's just not any fun. You know, I at least want Oregon State, if they're not even ahead of Oregon, which would be great, you know, who cares? I don't care either way. But to have them at least be a threat. And they won last year, they won this year. Now, here's another thing. Like, this game, like, if you're Oregon, you cannot really lose this game. Like, when you look at recruiting rankings the last few years, when you look at beating Ohio State, you look at winning the Rose Bowl a couple years ago, you look at all of those things, that you, all the advantages you have. If you let Oregon State beat you back-to-back years, ouch. I mean, that's a major, major ouch for that program and a huge boost for Oregon State. So I think there's more pressure on Oregon to win this Saturday than there is on Oregon State.
Yeah, when you think about, folks were thinking, well, could they go to the Cotton or Orange for a semifinal? Okay, the Rose Bowl, and now you're going to wind up in El Paso or something like that? Woof.
Exactly.
Couple final thoughts for Aaron Fentress of the Oregonian. NBA, I've thrown this out there to Blazer fans. Relax. New coach, new system, new faces. It's not like they were a powerhouse to begin with. So was there ever any way around with the lineup tweaks that you had to be patient and see if they make progress, because this was always going to be a long process?
Yeah, when they came back from that road trip, the one that gave me COVID, and they were 6-8, they came back 1-3, and I came back with COVID. What a hell of a road trip. You know, they're 6-8, and I remember just checking Twitter and then listening to some of the fringe Blazers media, the superfan media, I like to call them. And they were just like, sky is falling, you know, everyone's bad, everyone's this, trade this, trade that, Chauncey's not this, Chauncey's not that, O'Shea's a moron, blah, 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 blah. My, how their tune have changed in the last 3 games, coming home, beating Toronto, beating Chicago, beating Philly, and now they're sitting at 9-8 with a chance to beat Denver tonight. The bottom line is, this team is just Jekyll and Hyde. It's a really good team at home. On the road, they're really, really bad. And like you said, they said coming into the season, there's going to be growing pains, it's going to take time, and it has taken them time to find the consistency, but at least they've been able to put things together at home. And also, Damian Lillard has turned things around.
Yep.
He's won Western Conference Player of the Week. You know, if you look at his stats over the last 7 weeks, he's shooting close to 40% from 3, averaging about 26 points per game. He's around 43% from the field, a little low for him still, but compare that to the first, you know, half of the season so far, when, or first, 9 games, but he was shooting like 26% or 21% from 3 and 33%. Like, it was just awful. So he's completely turned things around. And, oh, by the way, in that stretch, they've won 5 out of the 7 games he's played in. He sat out the Denver game because of his abdomen, and they got blown out, not only because he was out, but still, they won 5 out of 7 since he's turned things around. So now we're starting to see sort of what they envision the Blazers to be, and you can tell they're different mentality on defense, which starts with Dame. Dame is giving more effort on defense than he has ever. He admits that, and you're starting to see that sort of take hold. Now, they still have a road trip coming up, you know, this week. They play the Nuggets tonight, and they go to Sacramento tomorrow, and then Friday you got Golden State, which has the best record in the league, and then you turn around, and a couple days later you play Utah. right? So those, like, so this could easily get smacked right back down into sky falling with a couple of losses at Golden State of Utah. But again, we're still talking about the long haul here. I do think that eventually this team is going to put together like one of those stretches where they win 8 out of 9 or win 7 in a row, and they start to separate from 500 as they continue to get better.
Thanksgiving, NBA, definitely the time to jump to all kinds of reasonable conclusions. So we got the NBA's version of Hearns and Hagler in Detroit with LeBron whacking Isaiah Stewart in the face. Stewart loses his mind. LeBron gets a game. Ha-ha, tonight against the Knicks. Stewart sits 2 for further escalation. What was your read on this? Because, man, that was a hell of a scene.
Wow, that was crazy. My feeling on it was that Stewart was kind of holding a little bit and pushing, and LeBron was trying to shake him off. But he swung very violently, and I think he accidentally hit him in the face. I do not believe for a second that LeBron's reaction to that was, I'm going to pop you in the face. That's not LeBron. He's never been that kind of guy. Sure. It wouldn't make any sense in that situation. But still, swinging as hard as he did, even to shake him off of him, I thought was just completely uncalled for. So that alone, and then the fact that he did accidentally hit him in the face, yeah, I think he definitely deserved to be suspended. And then Stewart's reaction, you know, I mean, I get, you know, you felt like the guy swung and hit you in the face. You were pissed. I understand that. But at some point, you have to... You just have to maintain your cool at some point. I get the initial going up to him, but LeBron looked like he was trying to apologize. And then it was almost like the more they started to separate the two, the more hostile he became, which was bizarre. It's like you had your initial shot to pop LeBron if you wanted to, and then it wasn't until everyone started pulling you away that you really went ballistic and then continued to do so. And that's where if you're the NBA, you're just like, look, we can't have guys being this out of control. Like you can't. It's one thing to have to be held back. Great, we understand that you're pissed off, but then you become a little more subdued, and then all of a sudden you take off and try and go around the end, like it's a sweep, a Packer sweep around the end, right, to try and get to him, and you're running through people and over people, and it's just, you know, it's just a bad look, and it just makes you look like someone's out of control, and it makes you look like someone who could potentially at some point really lose their control and hurt and maybe hurt someone. He's a pretty big dude. He actually would have been a Blazer maybe had the Blazers kept that pick that he ended up trading to Houston for Covington during last year's draft. But anyway, I thought the NBA handled it well. I think the suspensions that were passed out were fair.
Yeah, I did too. And by the way, it was the rookie, Cade Cunningham, I think, who may have prevented a malice at the palace too. But,
good for him.
Anyway, he's Aaron Fentress of the Oregonian. Feeling better. Good to hear. You and your family have a most delightful, healthy, happy holiday. Be well, and we'll catch up next week, Mr. Fentress.
All right, man, later.
Take it easy. All right.